Next speaker has also been working with the Latino community, but in an urban fluoridated community. And Rosalia Mendoza is an assistant professor in the Department of Family and Community Medicine at the University of California, San Francisco. She earned her MD at the University of Washington and her MPH at Harvard. Please welcome Dr. Mendoza.
So good morning, all of you. I'll do my best to twist my neck for this presentation. So kind of following on Dr. Barker's studies of the rural community, we wanted to look at similar beliefs, practices, and attitudes towards fluoridation in San Francisco, which is a fluoridated community. Myself, Dr. Pollack, Dr. Weintraub, who is the director of this CANDU, the Center for Reducing Disparities in Children's Oral Health, and of course Dr. Barker as PI for this study. There's no disclosures or other things I'd like to share at this time, and just for time I'm going to kind of launch into the presentation. Again, kind of following Judith's ideas that she presented to you, Latinos are one of the racial and ethnic groups that are more likely to have early childhood caries in the United States, probably only being surpassed by Native American communities here. And yet Latinos are less likely to drink the municipal water supplies in San Francisco than their counterparts. And so following on that, we have the assumption that these families that are from low-income immigrant communities are not drinking the fluoridated community water sources when they're in place, and therefore this could be a sign of inadequate fluoride exposure that could put them at higher risk for early childhood caries. So we chose the study location, a comparison site for this pilot study in San Francisco, which is a fairly metropolitan area. It's been fluoridated since the 1960s with a one parts per million water fluoridation. In the Mission District, which is kind of represented in these red zones up here, are the areas that are primarily comprised of a Latino community, about 52%. 35% of whom are Mexican Americans, followed by immigrants from El Salvador, Nicaragua, Honduras, and Guatemala. A little bit less than 50% are foreign-born, and we're looking about a median Latino household income of $44,000 per year, and that's by the estimates from the city. 80% of the households are rental properties, so by and large, people are living, you know, sometimes four to six people per bedroom to make use of the space. It's a very crowded community, and people live with family members or friends. 20% are under the 18 years of age, and as I said, this is a fluoridated community. So the purpose of the study was to look at this low-income immigrant Latino community of caregivers who are taking care of young children between the ages of 0 and 5 and understand what are their beliefs and understandings around fluoride and fluoridation, understand what their drinking and cooking practices are and how they may differ, understand the awareness around the fluoridation in this urban community because it's been fluoridated for such a long time, and explore how the cultural context and immigrant experiences may be shaping some of these practices and or belief systems. So our methods, we recruited a convenient sample of caregivers and key informants that serve primarily Latino clientele in the Mission District. We had enrollment from two federally qualified health centers in San Francisco that basically serve the largest Latino communities in the Mission. And then caregivers were recruited from these health centers if they had were self-identified Latino and Hispanic. They took care of children, at least one child under the age of 5 years of age, and had lived in San Francisco, the Mission District, for at least the past 6 months or longer. Our key informants were made up of a large myriad of people. We really wanted to find people who had worked with the community for a while, and so we polled individuals, the Head Start directors, our Women and Infant and Children, our WIC Center directors. We took community dentists, nutritionists, and a lawyer who worked with some of around immigrant rights, as well as a representative from the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission to kind of get a larger background on these issues. Our focus groups and in-depth interviews were comprised of semi-structured interviews with our caregivers. We had open-ended questionnaires and prompts. All of these were conducted in Spanish, and our key informant interviews took place in English. We continued enrollment until the themes were saturated, as such with qualitative research, and we took the transcripts, translated them, coded them, analyzed them using Atlas TI. So moving into our results because of time. So our study population was comprised of 16 caregivers who were interviewed in 3 focus groups and 2 in-depth interviews, 94% of whom were female. So by and large, we were recruiting female caregivers. 94 had immigrated from Central America. There was some representatives from Peru. And the length of time varied from 6 months to a little bit longer than 2 years into San Francisco, and more than half had reported incomes less than $10,000. Notably, this is much lower than the median household income for Latinos for the city. So we were really focusing on low-income Latino caregivers and families, and then we had 7 key informant interviews. So the principal area to start off with, I think, are the beliefs around the mistrust of water. And we understand that this really starts off when, before they even arrive in the U.S. This is really starting in the countries of origin. A lot of this is based on the fact that people who drink the water in their countries of origin get sick. And there's a large practice of boiling the water in their countries of origin. Then they come to the U.S., at least in the Mission District, and these ideas and beliefs are reinforced. And they're reinforced because when they turn on the faucet, brown, dark-colored sediment comes out with the water. They also reported that the water tastes significantly different than the bottled water that they drank in the Mission District. And then these ideas were reinforced by family members and friends who had immigrated before them and said, don't drink the tap water, it's not good, drink bottled water. And then there were incidents where people reported local events. When there was a water main break, they would hear messages on the radio and TV, don't turn on your water, drink from it for a while. So they'd hear the negative precautions around tap water, but they wouldn't hear any follow-up message, oh, it's okay to drink the water now because the water main has been fixed. They also made mention of the Associated Press release where there were actually pharmaceutical contaminants or hormone levels accounted in the water. They heard about those on the radio and the news. So they were hearing about these events and also reinforcing their already held beliefs. There was also a belief system that bottled water was better. No surprise. Again, this started in their countries of origin. They would talk about if they had the money and the access to do it, they were purchasing bottled water in their countries of origin from stores and from the water trucks that would drive by and deliver water if they could afford it, and some even use filters in their country of origin. When they came to the Mission District in San Francisco, again, these were reinforced by experiences that it was safe and convenient to mix infant formula and to feed their young toddlers. They saw family members who were already always buying bottled water, and so this reinforced their practice. There was obviously successful marketing and the social norm. If you see everyone walking around with bottled water and doing it, it reinforces what you should be doing. And many reported this was a luxury. If you could afford it and you had reached a certain level of economic status, you were doing it for your family because it was better. The cultural context. By and large, people did identify that drinking water was the best beverage of preference for their young children. They did identify it was healthy. But for themselves, I think the interesting thing is there is this practice that, you know, when you have your meal that's either salty or spicy, you want a sugary drink to complement what you're eating. And so meals were often by caregivers, they would preferentially drink sodas or juices. But when they were thirsty, the best way to quench their thirst was with water. And however, some caregivers didn't drink water at all. They were drinking Coke with all their meals or juices with breakfast. So the drinking practices, which I think may really complement and be different from the rural practice, is that 88% preferably were drinking bottled water, regardless of their country of origin or how long they'd been in the U.S. Taste, safety, and water quality were the main reasons why they were doing this. The use of boiled water often would, or tap water or bottled water would happen with formula preparation. Again, if they had the money to buy the bottled water for their infants, they would. There is the use of bottled water, usually, but sometimes with tap water for young children, and they were buying the individual bottled water containers for infants and young children when they were out of the house doing errands. So taste was an important factor. Just like in the rural community, they tasted some of the additives. Caregivers noted very clearly there was something different. Possibly there was a difference in the hardness of the water, but they tasted the chloramination. And their interpretation of the chloramination is that there was a chemical or something wrong with the water. And they preferred the bottled water taste. It was a clearer thing for them. Children as well, this is where I was very surprised, could differentiate the difference. Some mothers, when they're trying to save money, would pour tap water into the plastic bottles and give it to their kids. And the kids would say, "Mom, that's not the right water. This isn't unbottled water. Please get me some." So there was a demand and a preference on the part of the children and other influences by family and friends and the social norm that bottled water tasted better. So where were they buying their bottled water? Principally two places, individual liters and packs of individual liters at stores and some of the warehouses like Costco. At Costco, so again, bulk, the cheapest you could get was around $1.20 to $2 per gallon. And then there was many self-serving filtered water dispensing machines outside of the grocery stores through Glacier water company, and they could buy 5 gallons for $2.40 for a gallon. So pretty economical, but then when you put it in the context of how much you would consume and the fact that most households we were talking with were under or around $10,000, you can understand this is not easy to support. Cooking practices, 100% of families that we spoke with were cooking with tap water, however. So families are getting some fluoride exposure that way, regardless of their attitudes and beliefs about tap water or bottled water. The principal rationale for this is that boiling water destroys a lot of the pathogens that they perceive are in the water, and so it was acceptable to do that. And then there was the issue, it was reinforced by messages from the Women and Infant and Children's Centers that you boil the water before you mix the infant formula, so they were getting these messages with their young children early. And more importantly, cost was a mitigating factor. A mother actually was laughing, and she's like, "Can you imagine how much I would spend on water if I bought bottled water for cooking?" It was just not something that, you know, they would imagine was financially feasible. Of the people who drank tap water, what was going on there? Well, 75% of households were actually drinking both, but majority bottled water. 88% preferred bottled water if given the opportunity, if it was there in the family member's household or they could purchase it. But cost was the major mitigating factor. And I think when in San Francisco, which is the fifth most expensive city to live in the U.S., this was affecting all communities equally, and as we have been in the, you know, very dire economic times, families are having to make very hard decisions. 62% knew about fluoridated tap water in San Francisco. So the messages are getting out there, but they aren't necessarily driving people's practice. They heard about this from their doctor or dentist, and what number is that? Three. They heard about it on the news, and they heard about it from their husbands. Often husbands had immigrated, or their partners had immigrated before them, had been in the U.S. for a while, had had work colleagues that shared this information about fluoridated tap water. But again, those other beliefs, as I mentioned earlier, prevented them from always choosing it. And no one reported any illness from drinking the water. So fluoride knowledge starts with acceptable public health messages, usually school-based programs in their countries of origin. They talked about mouth rinsing practices, they talked about tablet usage, and they felt very comfortable receiving fluoride treatment for their children in school-based and public health programs. They immigrated here and they still held the belief that fluoride was a chemical and that it was good for your teeth. But this wasn't expressed by the majority of the people who were in our study population. But of those who were knowledgeable, they did identify these issues. The acceptability of fluoride. Many people actually mentioned that there was concern about ingestion of fluoride in the toothpaste, and it was one of the main reasons that they delayed starting to brush their children's teeth with toothpaste, because they felt if the child couldn't spit at these young ages, 1 and 2, there wasn't a reason to brush their teeth. However, when we prompted them about questions around fluoride supplements, drops and tablets, they said yes. Most of the families in our in San Francisco were not being prescribed tablets or drops. So this is something that they were hypothesizing about because they didn't have personal experience with supplementation in the U.S. and they thought drops better than tablets because drops are easier to administer. They were willing to use fluoride varnish, however, and it really offset the belief that I don't want to administer extra fluoride to my child. How do I know if it's too much or too less? Because again, there are concerns of ingestion with fluoride. And so they liked the idea of a health professional delivering fluoride varnish either by a physician or a dentist. However, costs and dental access, they're like, if this is not covered by Medicaid or Medi-Cal, we don't think we could do this intervention, but most preferred to drink, the majority preferred to drink the fluoride tap water because they understood about tap water, its benefits, and they felt it was safe after the intervention with the focus groups. So considerations, they're willing to pay more for fluoridated bottled water, they're willing to drink the fluoridated tap water, but these are the issues that have to be addressed. And these are the messages that we have to, as a group, kind of consider that we have to explain how fluoride is beneficial for young children, especially in vulnerable, high-risk populations. We can disseminate it in different ways. We need to address the issue of tap water safety. If most of our families are renters and they don't receive the water reports from the Water Utilities Commission, how are they going to understand in a regular fashion that the water is being tested and that it's safe and it's translated into their language of preference? They were also concerned about the quality due to the old pipes that are in the buildings, and they have real experiences of sediment coming out of the pipes, and obviously cost is a positive driving force. So this is a kind of, again, our model, beliefs held in their country of origin. After immigration, we have these very important experiences that are occurring in a rural urban setting, and we can look at these and how we can modify our messages to impact drinking tap water and cooking with tap water that's fluoridated. So finally, fluoride knowledge, perceptions of safety and quality and taste are big issues that need to be overcome. We can't assume that children living in a fluoridated community are drinking the tap water, and so our messages have to consider that. And the cultural and local context must be considered, and they probably vary nationally as well as regionally. Policy implications, our knowledge around fluoridation, water, and safety, if we can work collaboratively between public health individuals, with our health professional specialists, with our social services, and with the water community, I think we could actually have a more centralized message, and we have to think about the best ways to deliver them. And the Public Utilities Commission has to think very creatively about how to disseminate these information to low-literate, non-English-speaking renters in the urban setting. And water usage assessments, you know, really need to be explored further in our state and national surveys so we really understand what is the exposure and practices of with fluoridated communities. So again, we think water consumption may be an indicator of fluoride exposures, particularly for a high-risk community. We think that perceptions around tap water fluoridation, safety, and quality have very important implications for changing acceptability of fluoridated tap water consumption, and taste preferences and costs cannot be excluded from any considerations with your health promotion for this community and similar rural communities. Thank you. Those are acknowledgments.